White Rocket Entertainment podcast number 543.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with TheWarEagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I am joined as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've had a couple of interesting days today, it seems like, from what little we were talking about as we logged in here. So, I think that spending a few minutes talking about Auburn sports might be just the remedy to make us feel a little bit better about life. What do you think?
Amen to that. Right. Something different. So.
That's right. You've had work stuff, and I was out rewiring my doing my air conditioner. So in the 100-and-something degree heat, and it was no fun. And I'm going to install a mailbox in a couple of days. So there's a lot of outside stuff going on here.
We're glad you survived the air conditioner thing to be here today with us on this podcast.
I fully expected that at some point this afternoon, the lights across this town were going to go out, and I was going to be going... So, yeah, that was a victory. My first victory was I didn't die. My second victory was that the air conditioner actually works now. I wish I knew why I had to replace the dadgum capacitor every... And I know there's, like, people that are much more... mechanically oriented than me, they're like, all he did was replace a capacitor. What'd you do? I've done that a million times. Yeah, well, A, I had some bad information that I wasn't able to do it, and I found out I was able to do it. And B, I had no idea what I was doing, and I was telling my wife, I'm like, how did anybody do anything before YouTube? How did anybody know how to do anything before YouTube? I guess books?
The old-fashioned way. Someone taught them how to do it in person.
Ah, well, it's a good thing we... have moved on from those days because I don't have anybody around here that would have done that. So I have to figure it all out myself. So that's fine. That's fine. All right. Well, what is new otherwise in your part of the world before we get going here? Anything worth noting?
No, let's talk about football.
Let's talk about football. So we had a little bit of comings and goings. Let's see. We actually got this Kaufman guy. That's the Vanderbilt defensive back. Am I correct?
Yeah, safety from Vanderbilt. We talked about him last week. He committed last Wednesday. He could play nickel and he could cover people. But he's more of a good safety. And also he's a guy, who was a freshman because last year didn't count. He basically has 4 years left to play, but he's already played some against SEC competition. And B, he knows the defense. He comes in knowing the defense. He can help the other guys in the secondary and, be ready to step in when they need him. So I think that's a big one. And a talented guy. I think that helps a lot.
Somebody described him, and take this for what it's worth, okay? Somebody described him as the most talented player on Vanderbilt's roster last year. So, that's not...
But we played Vanderbilt before, and some of the most talented players in the roster are pretty good.
I think
our current defense coordinator has pretty good insight into that roster, and he wouldn't have brought the guy over if he didn't think he was going to help. So
yeah, that's a truth. Yeah, I don't think anybody would know him better than the guy that I'm sure brought him over. I continue to be interested in the number of defensive players that we're bringing. This is weird. Now, help me out here. So first, the word on the street, I don't know what street this was, but the word on the street was, Auburn's offense is kind of a transition, right? But they've got that good old defense that's been good the last several years. They've got that to kind of fall back on and depend on until the offense gets going. Then I started hearing, the weak thing on this team is the defense. The defense is actually the weak part of this team, and they have problems on defense. And now we've brought in so many new players on defense, I'm beginning to wonder if that was true. What's the sort out fact in fantasy there?
I do think the defense was more reliable along, but I think we had a lot of guys leave too, right?
Yeah.
Over the last several months of the defense. I think we've lost more transfers out from that side of the ball, A, because of fit in the new scheme and positional fit, and B, because of, you know, maybe they, after spring practice, and they saw where they were on the depth chart and they knew they weren't going to play. So, I mean, I don't know the number top of head, but I bet it's 10 defensive guys since the end of last season.
Yeah.
And so we needed to replace some of those guys for depth purposes, at least, and safety was a position definitely where we needed somebody, so...
And it doesn't seem like it was in the linebacker core so much as it was several defensive linemen and a bunch of secondary guys, it seemed like.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a bunch. Obviously, we talked about the secondary. I think at cornerback, we have a bunch of really good players. And, you know, Drayshon Miller isn't even on campus yet. And so I think we got, you know, kind of six or seven guys deep there. And if you're after that, you're not going to see the field probably.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of guys that left fell into that bucket. And at safety, we were deeper, but we had, you know, we had Chris Thompson transfer out. And so I think that created a void that Kaufman can fill.
While we're talking about the defensive backs, I've heard this a couple of times in the last couple of weeks from different sources. They've said so-and-so, such-and-such a guy, well, he's a safety, but he could play nickel. Well, he's a nickel, but he could play safety or whatever. And I'm like, I was under the impression that there wasn't a whole lot of difference between a safety and a nickel. I was thinking that like a nickel is the extra, the fifth defensive back you bring in when the other team is throwing a lot of receivers out there. So I thought that, I mean, how could you be good at one and not good at the other? It just...
Well, I think we have seen over the years there are some players who play safety who are better at, you know...
run support
with coming forward and run support, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what they talk about is players who are safeties who are moving forward or moving backwards, right? And so when you're moving forward, you're going toward the line of scrimmage and you're doing run support or you're tackling the guy who's already caught the ball or whatever, right? Okay. And so, and I think, you know, Smoke Monday falls into that box as an example. He's a guy who's better coming toward the line of scrimmage and making a tackle in the open field or tack, you know, helping to run support or whatever else. He's not great at backing up and being that kind of center field pass defense safety, right? We've seen some of those guys in the past. We've had some of those guys in the past that are very good at that. That's not his thing, right? So I think, you know, if you – a nickel is a guy that covers like the slot receiver, right? And so primarily that the cornerbacks are covering the main outside receivers and the nickels covering the slot receiver. So he has to be able to, because it's the slot receiver and that guy's closer to the line of scrimmage and closer to the ball, closer to the, you know, where the offensive and defensive linemen are. A lot of times that guy has to be able to step up and do, you know, run support, right? Because maybe they run to his side and then he's playing run defense instead of pass defense and he's in there with the big guys. But also, you got to be able to cover that guy. You know, you can't be a big lumbering safety kind of guy when you're over that the little slot receiver. Because again, that guy might be Jalen Waddle, you know, and if you can't cover, you in trouble and the whole defense is burned before anything else happens. So I think, you know, I think that's what they're talking about when they say that. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think in the current Auburn defense, there are a couple of players who could play either one. And so because the guys who are better cover guys are more likely to be the guys who can kind of back up and play that free safety. And I think one of the things we're going to see in this Auburn defense that's different is I think we've, a lot of the last couple of years, we've had kind of two kind of more in-the-box kind of safeties, right? And I think the way passing games are going and the way things go, we need got more guys who could just cover and less of that. So I think that's one of the things going on and one of the things that Kaufman brings. So.
Well, I feel pretty good about the players that have been brought in. I feel like we've improved the defense. I feel like the defense must have been pretty good already. Okay, at least. I mean, I know they lost some pieces, but still. But I feel like now, I mean, man, we brought in this really good, you know, defensive back, brought in the good middle nose guard from UAB, you know, brought in these other guys. I mean, it's got to be my evaluation of how this team was going to play in the fall that I made about 2 or 3 months ago is not the same as what I'm thinking about them now. I feel like they have improved the team. Now, I don't know about the offensive line. I don't know about the depth at running back. I don't know about the quality of the receivers, or at least at this far in their careers, you know, being young, new to the system. The offense, to me, is a complete mystery. I have no idea. But the defense, I feel like the defense in the kicking game can see us through some of those games that you have to just kind of, you know, the Mississippi-type games are the ones where we have to just kind of wade through the mud and find something that we can do better than them to win, like, 27-24 or something like that. You know what I mean? And I feel like we've got those pieces on defense and special teams if we're not going to throw 50 at them on offense yet.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think offensively we got Tank and we got some guys who can run block, some tight ends who can block on the edge. And I think we're going to lean on that while we figure the rest out.
That's going to be it. All right. Well, speaking of, we got a defensive end from Kansas, Marcus Harris. I don't know much about him. And there's one more player we got to talk about. I'll throw him out there in the bucket. We can talk about him. TJ Chicken Parmesan Finley is our new backup quarterback. I don't know. So what do you think about these two?
I mean, Harris was a good player in Kansas. I think he's a good pass rusher. The other thing, you know, about him, and the other thing that I think is, somebody made a good point about this, about Harris and some of the other transfers we brought in. Like, he went to Kansas, but he's from a high school in Alabama. Okay. You know, a lot of the guys they brought in as transfers, brother, like, there's a Central Michigan running back who we're looking at. He went to high school in Mobile. Okay. Yeah. So we're not just bringing in transfers. We're bringing in transfers with connections to high schools in Alabama that could help us with high school coaches when we're talking to them and build some credibility in that direction. I think Harris is a good pass rusher. He's a little bit like a really poor man's Marvin Davidson-ish, right? But I think he's got some room to develop and be a good, solid kind of defensive end in the 3-4, somebody who does the, you know, stand in there like Marvin Davidson did and play the run a little bit, and not just be an upfield rusher guy. So I think it's a good signing, a good good commitment. And then TJ Finley, you know, I was we needed depth, yeah, right, at quarterback. Garnett left, and you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, right? And right now, we got Bo Nix and D. Davis, and that's kind of the basket, right? And we don't want to play Davis this year if we don't have to. And, you know, the backup was hurt in the spring, and they haven't really seen him. And I think, you know, we talked a lot, you know, about why did we play these other guys when Bo Nix was struggling? And I don't think this coaching staff wants to be in that situation. I think they want to have an option. I'm not saying they're going to have the itchy trigger finger, but what I'm saying is, if Bo Nix goes out there and plays like he did at Gainesville, he's not going to stay in there, stay in the game, and be the starting quarterback. He's going to be benched.
Right. So and I think it's interesting too to take into account that this may have been entirely imagined on my part, and I'm curious your thoughts about it. But I always had this sense that when Gus recruited Bo Nix, he's basically recruiting the whole Nix family, and he's selling himself, right? He's saying, Gus's job was to say, I know you want to come to Auburn. Here's why it's not a bad idea, right? That was Gus's job. And if it had looked like a bad idea, Gus would have done a Peyton Manning and gone somewhere else, you know, like instead of going to Ole Miss, you know, going to Tennessee. And so Harsin wasn't involved in that at all. He's got no connection to the greater Nix Pinson Valley club. He can say, you're not my best quarterback, I'm not going to play you. And, you know, maybe there's repercussions, but it's not like what I think Gus would have gotten, because, or if it is, it wouldn't be as, I don't know that he would care as much. You know what I'm saying? It's just he wasn't there from the beginning. So it just seems like he's not as
invested.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the right word. Yeah, that'll work. Invested in it. Yeah.
No, it's fair. I mean, he's not on the line with Bo Nix, and so that it would help them a lot if Bo Nix was improved and was successful and had a great season.
Yeah.
That's what they want to happen, right?
Yeah.
And so part of it is, I think they want somebody to come in and compete with Bo Nix.
Push him.
I mean, and you know, it'd be like, and Bo Nix sees somebody else leading the offense and making plays and be like, man, I got up my game. So not saying that Bo Nix doesn't think that way every day, but nobody has pushed Bo Nix since he's been here. So, you know, that has not happened. And so I think it is a good thing, but also think it's a thing of like after post Bo Nix world, you know, right now we got Finley, D. Davis, and this, you know, guy still in high school, Grenier, who's committed or whatever. So that's the post Bo Nix quarterback world. It's better to have more options there. And Finley's a talented guy. A lot of big schools wanted him.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Alabama and a lot of other big schools wanted Finley. And so it's good to get him. It's good to have depth at quarterback. I mean, again, Bo Nix could get, you know, have some kind of leg injury, and then we'd be in a season. What do you do? You know, so I think in that sense, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if Finley's going to come in with no spring practice and beat out Bo Nix.
Right.
I think I'm a little skeptical about that. But, you know, he had a couple of good games against SEC competition. So,
yeah, his worst game was Alabama, but most people's is.
Yeah, he did not do well against us. I'll say that.
Well, that's true. So. I just feel like that's the trade up right there. We got rid of Garnett.
Yes.
And brought in Finley. And I mean, that's.
You're right. That's an upgrade in the roster spot.
Definitely an upgrade, yeah. And if we could bring in a new running back, that would definitely be an upgrade. Did Finley come by way of the portal?
Yes. And this is interesting that, like, you know, the NCAA has passed their rule that everybody can transfer and to be eligible immediately. The SEC has not passed their internal rule that you can transfer from an SEC school to an SEC school and be eligible immediately. But they're voting on that in a week or two, and everybody expects them to pass it. So Kaufman and Finley both fall into that boat where if they didn't pass that rule, they wouldn't be eligible. But everybody thinks that rule is going to pass. So that's why they went ahead and did it.
Another victory for the portals. You knew I was going to create it. I warned you.
I'm just glad you didn't hook it up to the air conditioner. we'll get to that.
That is our new portal theme. You'll hear it whenever somebody transfers in or out. I know everybody's excited. Let's see. And anything else in football that I'm forgetting?
No. Yep.
Basketball. Scoot Henderson is going to the G League. The G League just sounds shady to me. The G League just sounds like something the mafia runs.
Hey,
yo,
shady.
We're starting up a G League. Yo, it sounds like they get paid in cash in ones and bundles in a paper bag. You know, guys in fedoras with smoking cigars. It just sounds shady. I'm sorry, somehow, but yeah, we kind of I get the sense that it was pretty much obvious to everybody. For a while now, that was going to happen. It's why Bruce went out and got the Arkansas. Was it the Arkansas or the Georgia guy that we got?
The Georgia guy. We're going to talk about him in a minute. So, yeah, again, Henderson was still technically a junior in high school, okay?
Yeah.
He will be a senior in high school next year. The word was he was going to – a rumor for a while he was going to reclassify, and then people thought he might come to Auburn. But he spurned Auburn and all the other schools and signed directly with the G League. He got a high school junior. He got $1 million to leave and go play basketball in the NBA's minor league. So
$1 million.
And you know the we'll see what happens with the guys. You know the guy that we talked about before, Green, who's doing this, did the same thing, and now he's in the draft. And we'll see where he gets drafted. So the interesting thing is, you know, the Auburn for a long time was. You know, we couldn't get any recruits, and now we're basically in competition with kind of two professional leagues, the G League, and there's this new other league they created called Overdrive that's in Atlanta, and it's a league basically where they go to high school players and say, we'll pay you, you come here to this private high school, we'll coach you up with the goal of getting you to the NBA, and you basically are playing like in a private professional high school league. They'll pay, you know, they pay you whatever, $150,000. And they signed a couple of, there was twins or whatever, I think that Auburn had been rumored with and some other schools, and they signed with that league on Friday. So this is going to be a future competitor for Auburn for players, too. So.
I agree.
Yeah, but it's, you know, this is kind of where we've come.
Hell is the world coming to?
That's it.
That's an appropriate use of that one today.
That is appropriate. All right. So we got a KD Johnson.
Yeah, who is basically who's Georgia's second best player.
I approve.
He was like the sixth man. He kind of got the same treatment, you know, that Sharif got, where he was forced to sit out like 10 games. And his first game back was the game that where Sharif, when we went to Athens, it was the Sharif's first game, whatever, I think. So he's really good. He's explosive. He's a good outside shooter. He's athletic. And I think he's going to be the absolute, he's going to be the starter day one at shooting guard, I think. And I think the Arkansas guy is going to be the number two guy at shooting guard. And then we got the two other transfers, the point guard, Wendell Green and Zepp. So I think, you know, great depth at guard, talent, huge upgrade. And again, like, think about it this way. Like, we had, you know, our two freshmen from last year gone, and we, and Jamal Johnson, we replaced him with these four guys. So I think we really, you know, upgraded in terms of experience. But like, yeah, this guy again was a true freshman last year. He has several years of eligibility left, so he's an exciting player, and I think he's going to make a big difference for us. So,
did you see that Bruce has had to like take them out? They were out at the creek or something, the lake today, splashing around and stuff. And he said they're going to just play like pickup basketball just for fun, because they don't. I mean, it's like a whole new team, right? I mean, half the team is new, half the team is different, and we still don't know what's going on with Thor.
Well, it's not just that they're new. It's that he hasn't got to see them play in person. Yeah. He and his staff haven't got to scout these guys in person. They've seen him on videotape. So they want to see them play in person and kind of pick up games for a while before they go and install the offense and say, this is what your role is going to be, and these are the things we want you to do and not do, kind of. All right? So.
I haven't said that. I haven't said this since – Thor 2 The Dark World came out, but what is going on with Thor?
Listen, you know, he drank a little too much after Infinity War, and he ate too much, and I think Thor's gonna go in the NBA draft. I think it's happening. I don't think he's coming back.
What's he taking so long about, though? Why didn't he just say it?
Well, I mean because there's still a chance, you know, that he could decide to come back, whatever, I guess. It's kind of charade or whatever. But I don't know why he's not saying it. But I don't think he's coming back. I think when you get to this point, he's gone. So that's my belief.
Well, any other basketball news? I guess we're just letting the team kind of get together and work out their pecking order and who's going to do what and all that. And
oh, yeah.
It is. I mean,
the only other news I would say is that there are people predicting Auburn in the top 15 in the country. So.
And yet Tennessee's bringing in all these 4- and 5-star players. That's,
well, I mean, I think the SEC next year is going to be loaded. I think Auburn will legitimate be an NCAA tournament team and a top 20 team and stuff. And I think there are like 6 or 7 top 25 NCAA caliber teams in the SEC. It's a really, really strong league next year. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah.
But also, like, to say that we're the favorite or whatever is a little much right now.
A little much. Yeah, it's how far it's come, too. I mean, think about the day of Kentucky and the 9 dwarfs or the 11 dwarfs or whatever. So, and then for a while, it looked like it was going to be just Arkansas was the only other team that would be any good. And now it's just quite a few. So it's interesting. Yeah, the SEC has changed a lot. I know that the women's golf team is going into the 4th round of the NCAA championship. And I know that Auburn baseball is going to play Ole Miss on day one of the SEC baseball tournament on Tuesday, which is the day that most people will be listening to this, I think. So other than that, I guess, and there's probably some other stuff going on that I've missed out on, but I just know those things are happening. We don't do a lot of reporting on other sports besides football and basketball, but I figured I'd throw that out there. All right. Any other news?
No, but the baseball team kind of rallied to make it. So that was,
yeah, they did. That was pretty awesome. Yeah, they had from everything I understood, they've just had a lot of bad luck all year, and they had some injuries that in the especially the pitching. And when that starts happening to a baseball team, you know, it's kind of hard to it really takes a it puts a blow on you, you know. So They were able to rally and get some players back and get to playing better, and they fought their way into the tournament. And because, like, what, two teams get left out? The two bottom, I think. You get down to 12. Yeah, so you don't want to be one of those two. That was really suck. Because I thought, my understanding was our baseball team was going to start getting pretty good. We had a good manager, we got good players, but just stuff happens, you know. So we'll see what happens in the postseason. It's one of the things that's so great about postseason. It's like you're starting over, you know. You get a whole new lease on life, a whole new chance. I'll say this, and this was interesting. This is interesting. I'm not on Instagram, but my wife occasionally goes on there mainly to keep up with, like, celebrity dogs that she likes. Big on, like, Doug the Pug and stuff, you know. And so she follows some Auburn stuff, and she saw there was a conversation going on there where I think it was that the Auburn social media account today tweeted and Instagrammed and whatever the 94 LSU interception game. They put a clip of it because I remarked on Twitter that as soon as you and I start writing a book about that season, suddenly everywhere I look, people are talking about that game. Everybody's like, oh, I remember that game. Well, that was great. And I'm like, I just spent like a week breaking that game down and like typing out play by play, you know, breaking the game down. And now all of a sudden everybody's talking about it. I'm like, keep your powder dry. Let's don't get tired of it, man. The book's coming. But one of the people that commented on it on Instagram that she saw was Willie Anderson. And he was the great All-American and NFL pro, All-Pro offensive lineman on Terry's early teams. And he's a big reason why Terry Bowden had a running game there for a while. But not later. He was gone. But
I wouldn't know if Willie has any eligibility left. He could use a tackle.
Amen. Oh, man. But what Willie was saying is that whole era has been kind of forgotten. He says, in his words, something like, because of Bowden hate, and we should remember it. And I'm like, exactly, that's what we're trying to do, right? I've been mentioning on Twitter and Facebook and stuff for the last 2 weeks that the Terry Bowden era in our upcoming book is huge. I mean, you and Pat, your brother, and I had a great long, like, two-hour conversation about it, which is the spine of what we then have in the book, which is built off of that. So if you are wanting to kind of bring back and resuscitate and relive the high points of the Terry Bowden era, have we got something coming out for you pretty soon. And as I keep saying, it's really kind of like the appendix of a book that's mostly about Pat Dye, because it's going to cover 1975 through 1998. So it's going to have a little bit of Shug, a little bit of Barfield, and then 80% of the book, 70% of the book will be Pat Dye, and then the last 25% will be Terry Bowden. So I just wanted to update folks right quick that the book is coming along. It's mostly put together now in terms of writing out the narrative. I'm still going back through and adding quotes and interview clips and play-by-play clips, stuff that wasn't in the original podcast version. This is very much expanded. So this is going to be quite a tome, and I think people are going to really enjoy it when it's done. I would look for it probably mid-August. I'm expecting it'll go on sale in paperback and on Kindle probably the middle late August, and I intend to have a stack of them with me at Dragon Con on Labor Day weekend in September.
Excellent.
Yep. Let's see. We're going to talk.
You should probably camp out at your local bookstore now. just wait.
Go ahead.
I'm here for the unnamed, book by the authors of Decades of Dominance. I'm just waiting.
That's exactly what you should do. I think that's good advice. That's right. All right. So tonight we turn our attention to the wide receivers. This should be fun. So we're going to look at the greatest wide receivers in Auburn history. And I'm going to go ahead and bring up the media guide. You have a nice little list here. Excuse me, but I'm going to go ahead and bring up the master thing. And let's see. So how do you want to introduce this?
Well, first, I wanted to do wide receivers because I thought it would be way more fun than offensive linemen. So that's why we're doing that one tonight. So, so first of all, again, we have to ask this question every time. What matters to you? And when you're talking about most important wide receivers, what matters? Is it consistency, like they always made the catch to get a first down? Is it big plays? Was it run after the catch, or was it more like make the tough catch in traffic and that kind of thing? Or is it kind of game defining winning plays or season defining plays that, or was it kind of raw accumulated stats, right? Because we've talked about the couple guys on this list, people, you know, especially from that Bowden era that people don't think about that have big numbers.
Oh yeah.
And so I kind of divided these groups into people into three piles. Okay, one pile is just Terry Beasley, and we'll talk about him by himself. And then one pile is kind of possession receivers, and one pile is big play receivers, right?
All right, I got to point this out. This is really interesting to me, and I like how you did that. In terms of receptions in a season, okay, just purely catches, pass catches in a season. And by the way, my gosh, we've only had two 1,000-yard receiving seasons in Auburn history. Two. Yeah. And they were barely. But in terms of pass receptions per season, about half the list is Gus's teams, believe it or not, and about half the list is Terry Bowden teams. There's a little bit of Tuberville in there. You've got, I'm not going to say names or years. I'm just going to go down and say this is who the head coach was in each of these years from 1 through 10, pass receptions per year. All right, here we go. Number one, Gus. Number two, Gus. Number three, Chizik. Number four, Gus. Would you have guessed that three of our four pass reception receiver most in a year would be Gus? I never would have said that. Three of the top four.
No, but it is a more pass happy era. It's different.
Yeah. Okay. Number five, Terry Bowden. And number five, tied. Actually, number six, basically, is Terry Bowden. Number seven is Tuberville. Number eight is Shug Jordan. Number nine is Tuberville. And number 10 is Terry Bowden. So you got one, two, three Terry Bowdens. One, two, three, Gus, and one, two, Tubbs, and a Shug, and a Chizik. That just surprises me, and that's in pass reception. All right, so while we're talking about that, let's finish this category out. The top two pass reception years were both Ryan Davis, 2017 and 2018. That doesn't surprise me. Does it surprise you?
No.
Because he had big years his last 2 years.
That's right.
And then Darvin Adams is third. Seth Williams is fourth. And then you have Willie Gauthier and Frank Sanders, both from the mid-90s, tied at five, 58 catches. Ryan Davis, by the way, 84 catches is so far beyond anybody else. His number two is him at 69 the next year. Ronnie Daniels has the only other 1,000-yard season besides Terry Beasley, and that was in 1999 when he was the offense. And then Courtney Taylor and Carsten Bailey. That's your top 10 reception. So you want to look at yardage. Again, the top two, Ronnie Daniels is number one in 1999, 1,068. Terry Beasley, number two in 1970, 1,051, by Pat Sullivan. And then number three and number four in pass receiving yardage is Darvin Adams. How about that? 2009 and 2010, Darvin Adams. I think it's interesting. Darvin Adams had more yards by just a little bit with Chris Todd throwing to him than he did with Cam Newton throwing to him. I guess the offense was more spread around in 2010. And then after that, you got Frank Sanders, Tyrone Goodson, Sammy Coates is in seventh, Terry Beasley, Frank Sanders, Carsten Bailey in yardage. Interesting that Ryan Davis doesn't come up until 12 and Seth Williams 11, if you carry it on down. And then the last, I do want to mention one more thing. There's touchdown receptions. We can talk about that if you want to. A bunch of people got seven. Terry Beasley got 12 and 11. Darvin Adams got 10.
Per year.
Yeah.
In one-year seasons, yeah.
Yeah, but here's the one I think is interesting. Yards per reception, minimum 20 receptions. The number one season for yards per reception, Freddie Weygand, 1984. 796 yards, 25 yards per catch. That's ahead of Alexander Wright, believe it or not, in second.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah. But that's the list where you find Sammy Coates, Devin Aromashadu, Lawyer Tillman, Will Hastings, and he's on there, 20.19, and Chris Woods back in the 80s. Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. Freddie Weygand in 84 on a wishbone team, John. That was a wishbone offense has the most yards per catch. Now, that's only on 32 receptions, but he went for almost 800 yards. So that's pretty interesting. All right. So you have them broken down into three categories.
All right. So we have to talk about Beasley by himself, right?
Yes.
He is the top in terms of career yardage and touchdown receptions. He's number one for Auburn for to all-time career. And in terms of catches, he's fourth. So, I mean, nobody else is close. And like you said, there's only been a couple of thousand-yard seasons. He's, you know, I don't know how many other players we've ever had that were like all Americans at wide receiver. Okay.
Yeah.
It may just be him. We could check on that. But so I think, you know, he's in a category by himself to me. Terry Beasley is the best single receiver we've ever had. And a lot of it, but again, way before a lot of people's time, kind of before our time. And so I want to kind of break down the other piles of receivers and talk through kind of the different ones that are on here, kind of what we think about them and kind of who we really liked and who's underrated and that kind of thing. So on the possession type receivers, you know, you mentioned on there the recent one that comes really to mind, Ryan Davis, mm-hmm. right?
Because he never caught bombs. He catched little short dink passes, and then he was just very elusive.
Yes. But he was super valuable in that drop it off 5-yard role. Darvin Adams, I think, he made big plays, but he was super smooth and very, I just think of him as incredibly reliable, like first down, get the first down receiver.
Yeah.
One of the biggest plays in the, you know, the 2010 comeback in Tuscaloosa catch. So, Tyrone Goodson.
Very underrated. Very underrated.
Do you think I have him in the wrong pile or no?
I think he did both. I think that I think you have Carsten Bailey in the wrong pile by far. But I think that Tyrone Goodson could do both. I think that sometimes he was more of a possession receiver on a team that had Carsten Bailey and Eric Lowe and a couple other guys. But I think there were other times that he could go deep like he did against Tennessee in the SEC championship game in 1997. He caught that 50-something yard bomb on the goal line and fought his way in. So, I mean, he wasn't the kind of guy to be streaking down the field and catch the ball in stride. That's more of a big play receiver, whereas a possession-type guy, usually kind of like a basketball player getting a rebound, you know what I mean? He kind of sets his position and goes up and gets it.
But I'd tell you, I'm probably giving Goodson not enough credit there. He did make a lot of big plays. Again, all-time stats, you know, Goodson is second in total yardage and fifth in catches for Auburn. So incredibly – people forget how much we threw the ball in the Terry Bowden era, and he caught a ton of those.
Absolutely.
And you said I had him in the wrong pile, and you're right, Carsten Bailey, another guy from the same era, but productive.
Oh, but the thing I remember about Carsten Bailey is game after game, he was the one that would make the catch in stride and weave his way through the secondary for a score. He did it against Georgia. I just wrote this game up a couple of days ago, the 1997. That was the DeMontre Carter game where we ran the option where I had we've had Cole Kublik on to talk about that we came out with a completely different offense. We had an off week and just totally shocked Georgia. Like, most of that game was DeMontre Carter and Fred Beasley, but there was the one play, like a 75-yard bomb where Carsten Bailey caught it in midfield and just streaked past the Georgia defense. And he did that against Central Florida, I think, maybe even in 98. Remember when we were going to lose to Central Florida in 98 with Brother Oliver? I think Carsten Bailey took like a 55-yard pass down the sideline for the score that won us that game. He was just always, in fact, he's tied for eighth twice on touchdowns, 1997 and 1998, touchdowns in a season. Yeah. I really like Carsten. He's number 10 on our receiving yardage.
Yep. Very productive player. Emery Blake, a well-rounded, productive player.
Yeah, he came into his own in 11 in a lesser year, but he was a very important third receiver. He was the third receiver on the 2010 team, the national championship team. You had Darvin Adams and Terrell Zachary as your two main guys on that team. But Lutson Kirchen was the release valve along with Fannin, and Blake was like the reliable third receiver that could catch a short pass and make something big out of it. Famously caught the pass against Alabama in Tuscaloosa for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
There were three touchdowns caught. Well, yeah, in that game, because the fourth touchdown was Cam diving over from the goal line. But in the Camback 2010 Iron Bowl, there were three touchdown catches. One of them was Terrell Zachary going down the left sideline right after halftime, wasn't it? And one of them was to Lutson Kirchen in the third quarter. But the other one, I think, wasn't it Emery Blake right before halftime that caught the ball?
Yes.
On the fly in the left corner of the end zone running in, yeah. Yeah, he was the featured receiver along with Lutzy in 11. But in 10, he was a very important component on that team.
Courtney Taylor, one of my favorite players ever.
Oh, so clutch. He was the definition of a possession receiver. He was Lawyer Tillman reincarnated as a possession receiver.
But also, he came in with the group of receivers, the 2003, 2004, 2005 receiver class. And
yeah.
You know, was the one that was redshirted and so didn't get as much hype as the others, but was just a really, really solid player for Auburn.
It was so interesting how he came in the same time as Obamanu, Aroma Shadu, and Mix. And those three all played as freshmen in 2002, while Courtney Taylor redshirted because he was a quarterback. He wasn't a receiver. And so those guys all had a year of playing in the SEC that he didn't even play. And yet when he came out as a basically first-year player in 2003, he became the main weapon, the main receiving weapon for a lot of the season. He like jumped ahead of all those guys that started ahead of him and became the main. And by, of course, by 2004, he was the main receiving weapon on that team. Ask LSU.
You're right. And so, a really, really good player. And then Greg Taylor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very underrated. Solid, yeah.
I think he fits into the solid possession receiver category.
Very end of the Pat Dye era. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Weigand, who, again, listed to that yards to catch thing. Maybe I put him in the wrong bucket here. I think of him as a make-the-catch guy. But
Fast Freddy. He could scoot. He could scoot. He played 84 and 85 with Bo. And then he left the team in 86, but that was the year we actually went to a passing offense. So he came back and played in 87 and 88 on those two big teams that won the SEC. I think we might have skipped Ben Obamanu as well. He was a great player, and I feel like a lot of his legacy was tarnished by that unfortunate 0-3 game against Ole Miss.
Yeah,
against Eli Manning, where he had the winning touchdown in his hands, he dropped it in the end zone.
Yep.
But then against Alabama, he took that bubble screen for a touchdown when we beat them in 03. Everybody remembers 03 Cadillac taking the first play of the game 80 yards for a touchdown, but people forget a little while later, Obamanu took a bubble screen 80 yards for a touchdown too, or pretty close to it. He was a great player. Aroma Shadu will always be together in my head. Number two and number one, Obamanu and Aroma Shadu.
You're right about that. All right, so now more of the pure big play guys. And so I put Lawyer Tillman and Ronnie Daniels were the first two that came to my mind in this.
Oh, Ronnie Daniels. I mean, well, Lawyer Tillman was the greatest Auburn receiver of the 80s. I think we can say that. He was a receiver that could take over a game.
Yes.
And we didn't have a lot of those. And he did, yeah. And Ronnie Daniels in 99 and 2000 took over some games. Ask Georgia, right? 1999 Georgia, Ronnie Daniels single-handedly destroyed them.
Maybe the best individual game by an Auburn receiver ever.
Ever. We were a four-win team when we played Georgia. We were a four-win team that year when we played Georgia. We had no running game at all. And our quarterback was Ben Leard. Bless his heart.
Bless.
Georgia was a top 25 team, if I remember correctly. And Ronnie Daniels just went out there and abused them. I mean, Ronnie Daniels should have done jail time for the way he mistreated those Georgia players on defense. He abused them. My goodness. They couldn't tackle him. They didn't know what they were doing. Frank Sanders is another one. Oh, my gosh. What would the Terry Bowden era be without Frank Sanders?
Well, and one of the iconic moments, right?
Two
of the most iconic moments in Auburn history in those Terry Bowden games, the Alabama catch and the Florida catch.
Nix to Sanders 1 and Nix to Sanders 2. I was in the stadium for both of them. Both of them. I'm so proud. And it's unbelievable. Yeah, the first one was we were trailing Alabama at home, and Nix put the ball in the – he came in, right? Stan got hurt.
Stan got hurt. Nix came in for one play.
Yeah, off the bench. They said, why punt? We're on like their 40. Let's just throw it up, see what happens. And Sanders took it in because Antonio Langham crossed the other side. Antonio Langham had been covering Frank Sanders all day. We had this brilliant idea to put Frank on the other side, see what happens. Antonio Langham kind of looks and then goes back to the other side. And they're like, oh, throw it to Frank. Throw it to Frank. He's open. And then against Florida the next year in Gainesville.
Yep.
That, oh my gosh, that was unbelievable. Yeah, Frank is amazing. He went on to play for the Cardinals. Let's see. Sammy Coates, he was just such a big target, just so powerful. Like the freak, right?
And again, one of the biggest plays of the kick six game, right? A lot of other big plays that year. So
yeah, the touchdown that tied the game.
Yes.
That's right. Oh, man, yeah. And then he had a big 2014. That's one of those seasons that kind of gets lost because we only went 8-5. But remember against Alabama in Tuscaloosa that year, Marshall to Coates, they had like 500 yards. Alabama, until Ole Miss, with Freeze came along, they had never given up passing yards like that at home. But you know what was going on. Yeah, you have Seth Williams there. I think that's fair. Seth is certainly was a big play receiver for us. I'm always going to hate that he never had the career maybe he could have had because he honestly, I mean, when was the last time that we played a really, really, I mean, I guess his moment is going to be against Washington, right? Was it Washington or Oregon?
Oregon.
I get those two games completely mixed up. That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's probably going to be that and Texas A&M where he destroyed Texas A&M in the fourth quarter. That's kind of what I think of when I think of Seth Williams of those two games.
Yep.
Let's see. And there's a Roma Shadu for sure. I mean, just remember against he had just so many good plays over his 4 years. And the Georgia game in 2005 where he caught the ball, fumbled it, and Courtney Taylor jumped on it in the end zone and put us on the goal line. Terrell Zachary for sure. Oh, I love Terrell Zachary. He was awesome. He had so many big moments. He was like the spark plug on that team. We would always be behind. And what would get things fired up is if Cam could hit Terrell Zachary for a long pass, you know?
There was a lot of games that season where Zachary made a big play and it did kind of open things up.
Clemson, Alabama, those both come to mind immediately. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think he had like an 80-yard bomb against Clemson that put us back in the game when they had us down like 20-something to 7 or something. Yeah. Let's see. Who else you got?
Alexander Wright.
Ace.
In my mind, the original just kind of like track guy for Auburn, I think of like just running past defenders. Darius Slayton. I think Coates, Slayton, same kind of guy, a big play down the field guy in Gus's offense. Then I put Chris Smith on here, back in the 83, he was the downfield guy. And then Van put Herbert the Weapon Casey.
Yes. How could you forget Herbert the Weapon Casey?
Well, he does have the best nickname.
Oh, man. I just like that he embraced that nickname and like tried to get everybody to call him that. It's not like that was the name that – it's one of those things where you don't make up your own nickname. He's like, no, I'm going to make up my own nickname. I'm the Weapon. And it was just so goofy that people actually called him that. Kind of ironically, right?
I want to go back to – okay. We appreciate you, Herbert the Weapon, but I want to go back for a second to my guy, Courtney Taylor.
Yeah.
All time, He is fourth in receiving yardage and second in catches.
Wow.
He was first in catches until Ryan Davis passed him a couple years ago. The guy that redshirted was behind all those other guys. I think really, really productive career for a guy.
Well, remember, like we said, he redshirted for a year, and so 05 was the year we had all those receivers playing as in their last year. In 06, he was the only one left, and so he got all of Brandon Cox's attention that year, and Cody Burns.
Yeah,
he really was the only. There have been years that we had more weapons than we can count. 2010, I was just telling you, there's so many offensive weapons on that team. There were years that we had like one player. 2006 and 1999 really come to mind as, you know, throw it to that one guy because he's all we really got. The two receivers that back in the day, we didn't talk about Dick Schmaltz, but that was the other guy across from Terry Beasley. And so he got a lot of catches just because they put all the defense on Beasley and he was open a lot. And I don't mean to take anything away from him. He's obviously a great receiver. But I think it was one of those cases of the other guy is so great that you're a little more open than you normally would be. So good for him for making something out of it. And I remember the receivers we had in those early Wishbone days with Pat Dye, Chris Woods I had it in my mind and it went away and he's not on the list. We used a lot of tight ends back then, like Ed West.
We'll do tight ends another day. Okay. There's a whole category. All right. We have more good tight ends than everybody thinks we do. So.
Who was the other receiver though on that team with Chris Woods on the 81, 82, 83? Clayton Buford had actually been brought in as a quarterback. And when Randy Campbell got the number one spot at quarterback, I believe they moved Clayton Buford to receiver.
All right, so Terry Beasley is one, and you have to pick two other players off this list. Who are they? Regardless of possession or big play guys, you can only pick two. Which two are you picking?
This is always so hard because there's so many that were so good in their time, in their era, and it's, you know, there's a recency bias, but with you and me, there's also a nostalgia bias, too, because we loved those guys back when we were there, you know. Some of our younger listeners are like, oh, I would totally take Seth Williams. I'm like, I don't know if I'd take Seth Williams. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I'd take Lawyer Tillman either in today's game. I don't know if he'd be fast enough, you know, whatever. Honestly, two guys. Oh, Lord. I would have a hard time. Carson Bailey dropped a lot of passes. He caught a lot of passes. He dropped a lot of passes. Courtney Taylor is awfully. I kind of like either Courtney Taylor or Frank Sanders. They're both kind of the same to me. Frank Sanders, Courtney Taylor. You flip a coin on that. I got that on one side. And on the other side. Oh, God almighty. This is killing me. You know, I might. God, Sammy Coates is tough to turn down. If he could be consistent, if he could play like he did.
He all drops too.
Yeah. Oh, man. I can't take Frank Sanders and Courtney Taylor, though, because now I got nobody that's going to go deep and have speed.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm going to go Courtney Taylor and Ronnie Daniels.
Yeah, that's tough right there. If you take Courtney Taylor and Ronnie Daniels, I'll take Frank Sanders and Carson Bailey, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That is.
Pretty good.
We didn't include Eric Lowe, by the way. I always thought of him as like, he was like the other receiver on those mid-90s teams that did a lot of good stuff, you know. He didn't have the big numbers that Bailey and Goodson did. No. And Willie Gauthier.
Willie Gauthier, another one. Marcel Willis.
Marcel Willis and Bailey. Thomas Bailey. The touchdown maker, the cocaine.
Robert Baker,
the cocaine deal maker.
Again, none of them were Herbert the Weber Casey, so.
No, but they got to get mentioned, and I mentioned them, and you mentioned them, so that's good. All right. That was good. All right, well, this is the kind of scintillating, brain-challenging conversation that you've come to expect from our program, and for as little as $1 a month, you can help keep this program coming out for your ear holes. All you have to do is simple, is go to www.auwishbone.com. auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button that says become a patron, and you get to join the family, the AU Wishbone family that keeps the show going. I'm going to thank personally everybody who has done that currently. And John, I'm going to just throw it right out there on the air right now, unscripted, unplanned. John's like, oh God, here goes this. I'm thinking that what we need to do, since the book is coming out in a couple of months, well, 3 months, all of our patrons who are patrons in August, their name is in the book.
I like it.
Done. Like, kind of like when the Lord of the Rings fan club include all their members at the in the end credits.
I like it. Done.
All right. If you are a patron of our program in August, so if you're there already, great. Just hang around. Don't go anywhere. But if you want to get in the book, join up before August, and because I'm going to look at what it's, when the book's ready to go to press, I'm going to look at the list and I'm going to transfer the list over. All right. All you got to do is go to www.auwishbone.com. We don't do ads. We depend entirely on you, the listener, to keep us going. You also get various benefits, including things like the NCAA tournament brackets that we play and a few other things. Currently, what we're doing is the Formula One Fantasy League. And I'll tell you the top five real quick. I will tell you. Here are the current top five in the AU Wishbone Open Wheel Formula One Fantasy League. I am number one, humbly. I just got back into first place this after Monaco this week with Blue Tiger Racing. Number two is Mira Plexico with Del Taco Racing Team. Number three is Richard Stevens. Way to go, Richard, with RAS's Racers. He's in third place now. Number four is Jared with the GTG Racing Team. And number five is Rob Morgan with the Vesper Team. And Alan, good old Alan, who's, I'm sure, incensed not to be in the top five, is right out at number six. So there is our current standings. We'll keep updating that all season long for those that are enjoying playing. Now, we have to thank the following folks who make our show possible. They include Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B., Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy W.D. Richie, I gotta get better at celebrating, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, and Chris the Hilton, plus Colby Butler. And then we have, of course, Danny Flack, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, any day now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger Still Lives, Albert Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Scalabric, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, and finally, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, Chris Plus, our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now, excuse me, And now it is time for another scintillating episode of Jared's Guess the Game. Are you ready, John?
Probably not.
Here, ready or not, here we go with this week's episode, installment of Guess the Game.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game, episode 14. As promised, we have another send-in today. It is from listener Bill Miner, who suggested this play.
Now watch out for here. Reaches out of the end zone. Safety is a signal by the line judge. The line judge coming down signaled safety. Tried to extend out. Take a look.
All right, Van and John, discuss amongst yourselves, and I will see you in the hint file.
All right. First of all, that was Musburger.
Definitely.
Okay. Second of all, it was a safety where a player was trying to get out of the end zone.
Yep.
So it was like a quarterback that retreated in the end zone and then was trying to get dive forward to get out, but there was a safety.
That seems reasonable.
What games has Musburger called?
Well,
he's been retired a while. So.
The one that always comes to my mind that he called was the 94 Florida game in the swamp. That didn't sound like that to me.
I don't think there was a safety in that game, was there?
No, I don't think there probably was. There wasn't too much going forward in that game.
Yeah. Offenses couldn't be stopped. So I'm not sure. You got any other ideas? But I think that's the right era. 93, 94, 95.
I think it's a little more recent. Let me play it again. Oh, where'd it go? Let me play it again. I think it's a little more recent.
Send in today. It is from listener Bill Miner, who suggested this play.
Now watch out for here.
Reaches out of the end zone. Safety is a signal by the line judge. The line judge coming down signaled safety. Tried to extend out. Take a look.
All right, Van and John, discuss amongst yourselves, and I will see you in the hint file.
When he bleeps out the name, sometimes it sounds like he's saying, a great play by that blank de blank. I can think of one slightly more recent game that I know Brent Musburger called.
Okay.
The opponent were the Ducks.
For all the Tostitos.
For all the Tostitos.
Was there a safety in that game?
Well, let's see. It was 22-19. So it was tied at 19 when we kicked the field goal. We had a touchdown to Cody Burns. We had at least... That wasn't the only touchdown, was it?
No.
No, it wasn't four field goals. So how about two touchdowns, a field goal, and a safety?
So you think when they're bleeping out, you think they're saying, watch out for Nick Marshall? I mean, watch out for Nick Fairley?
Could be.
All right, I like it.
I feel like we got – I think you're right in terms of the quarterback normally, but I want to say that this was we stopped Oregon's running back that – Musburger kept calling the ringleader of this Oregon offense because it wasn't Darren Thomas. Darren Thomas was a serviceable quarterback, but that was
DeAnthony Thomas or Kenny Barner or the other guy.
Not Barner, the other guy. It's funny that we remember
DeAnthony Thomas is the smaller.
Yeah, he wasn't on that team. He wasn't on that team. That was a couple years later. The Black Mamba. No, this was they had two running backs. Because Brent kept calling him by his first name, which was just driving me nuts. Like they were buddies.
All right, so I like this call because I was trying to figure out if it sounded like a home game or a road game.
I think it sounds like a dome,
Okay, I like this. I like this call.
I was there, so I remember that sound. All right, let's try it. Here's the hint. I know Darren Thomas was the quarterback and Kenyon Barner was the second running back. But I can't think of the name of the main running back, but I think that's who it was. And it might have been our defensive end that got him. Let's see if that's the case. All right, here comes the hint.
Here we are in the hint file, so let's go ahead and give that play a listen with no bleeps.
Now watch out for 90 here.
Reaches out of the end zone. Safety is a signal by the line judge. The line judge coming down signaled safety. LaMichael tried to extend out. Take a look.
Oh, I bet if you didn't get it before, you've got it now. So I will see you in the answer file.
LaMichael James?
Yeah. And he said, watch out for 90.
Yeah, well, I know who 90 was. I don't think that's who actually got him, though. I think it was our defensive end that that was a freshman that year and left after 12, turned pro after 3 years and wasn't on the 13 team. I can't think of his name. He had like the French name or something. Remember that guy?
Oh, well. Yeah, but
anyway, keep going. I think it, yeah. So it was LaMichael James, it was Oregon, and I think it was him, a defensive end. All right, here is the answer from Jared.
All right, Van and John, I am quite certain that you have pinned down that this is Auburn versus Oregon in the 2010 National Championship game, which was technically played in 2011. I know I was there. I know Van was there. It was a good one. Once again, it was Bill Miner who sent it in and said, quote, a fun play selection would be the safety in the 2010 title game. It was a huge play since it came right after missing a fourth and goal, and we needed every point. Well done, Bill, and well done, Van and John, and War Eagle.
That's a good point, is that we had gotten down to their goal line and gone for it on fourth down, and Cam threw a little out pass to Eric Smith, the fullback, and it was low, and he dropped it and fell on the ground, and we didn't get the first, we didn't get the touchdown. So Oregon took over on their own goal line, and then on the very next play, we got the safety. That's, I remember that now. It's one of those things where it comes back once the ball starts rolling, you know. I couldn't have, 20 minutes ago, I couldn't have told you any of that, but now I remember it. So, all right, that was a good one, Jared. That was really cool. I appreciate that.
And thank you, Bill Miner, for suggesting a play. If you have a suggestion for a cool play, please let Jared know. He's looking for them. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are really good. And we can't, yeah, I can't depend on Jared to think of a million of these. So everyone helps. Absolutely. And I hope it continues for quite some time to come. And now I think that British man has something to say.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. What do we got this week?
So the first thing we had this week was a little, listener feedback from Scott on Twitter, whose Twitter handle is ascottmess, which is pretty good, and who replied to your tweet about you were out working on the air conditioner, and said his family killed him after he connected the Wishbone soundboard to the HVAC, and he says, well, the thermostat says it's 72. I don't have facts to back this up. What's this vapor coming out of the vent?
Smoke weed every day.
That was really good. That was really good. I appreciated that.
I like it a lot. It was pretty funny. All right. Next is from Josh Corbett, who asked, why do y'all think we went after TJ Finley? Could Bo be not living up to the standard? I think it's more that they didn't want to put all their eggs. Right now, all our eggs are in the Bo basket and the D. Davis basket, and that's not a good place to be.
No. Not going into SEC West play, no.
That's exactly right. We need to be somewhere else. So,
yeah.
I think that's the answer.
Yes.
All right. The next is from Bill Miner, who suggested the play. He says, I'll be curious to see how Harsin – as a QB whisperer, will coach and improve both Knicks and Finley, both with technique and tailoring the offense to their skills. When was the last time we had a QB? We actually had a noticeable QB coach influence on a player. Borges and Campbell was notable. So, like, an actual dramatic improvement. I think Gus gets nuked for this a lot, but I think, like, Nick Marshall got better over the course of the season.
It's true. I think that Ben Leard got a lot better under Tuberville's staff than he was at the end of Terry Bowden's staff, that's for sure. That 98, his first year in 98, we were throwing a pick six on the first play of every game. But then in 2000, he ended up being like the SEC quarterback of the year.
You're correct. And we also got a question from another listener. I'm saving it because it's about the name, image, and likeness thing that's coming out. What does it mean for Auburn? And we're going to do an episode coming up the next few weeks where that's kind of the main brunt of the show, where we go into kind of what does this whole thing mean? Yeah. Why is it happening? What is, you know, what are the rules basically? What does it mean for Auburn? And I just want to put this out there. You know, what this means is we're not going to talk about this now in detail, but what it really means is like players can do like paid you know, endorsement kind of things for them as an individual, not as for them as the athlete or whatever. What it means is we down the road could have a player reading the intro for the AU Wishbone podcast.
That's the ultimate end point that this will all lead to. I like it.
Nothing else matters in terms of the individual likeness. All right.
That's good.
All right. So our next question is from Johnny Dent. And so he says, we're in the unfortunate position of having a great defense in an age of offensive dominance in football, specifically wide open passing attacks. While most Auburn fans agree that the Auburn offense can improve under Harsin in ways it couldn't under Mauson, how exactly does Harsin's scheme fit the current offensive trends? He is obviously more multiple and uses more pro elements than Mauson, but I don't think his offense falls quite in the same category as the Lane Kiffins, Joe Brady's, or Dan Mullins of the world.
No.
Do you see it as possible for an Auburn offense to ever reach those levels of passing proficiency under Harsin, or are we going to be more modest but balanced for the duration of his tenure and can be effective in that climate? I want to go back to something he said here. There's much more to this question. But, like, Dan Mullins is, you know, from the Urban Meyer, you know, coaching tree of offense. Again, we're – you know, they were running Tebow into the line of scrimmage all those years under him, and now they're doing different stuff. So I think it's possible to evolve. And I think Harsin is much more willing to use kind of the modern passing game concepts that are being successful other places. I think you're going to see that.
It's going to be interesting to see what he does choose to do. Yeah, and Bobo, yeah.
Yes, 100%. And then there's a whole, you know, he has a whole Jonathan has a whole thing about Marvel Comics that I'm going to send Van. He can reply to, but we're not going to go to that right now. And then the last question is from a friend of the podcast, Auburn Elvis.
Yes,
and he says was a listener question. He says this is the year Van has improved so much under this new time away from teaching. He's focused. He's having fun. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a dark horse for Father of the Year.
This is, you know, Auburn Elvis came up to me with that statement, and I looked at him and I said,
I cannot eat. I am finicky about company.
And he said, but I want to eat. And I said,
you sit at my table.
Revenge.
Yeah.
You know when this will end, John? Do you know when this will end?
Someone knows. God knows.
I do enjoy myself on our program. And as long as I'm having fun, that's all that matters as far as I'm concerned.
Fans having fun, bands having fun. All right, so last question from Jay Knoll on Twitter. He says, I'm hearing the comparison of the super simplistic philosophy of our past offense to our new direction. Was Gus a guru who couldn't adapt, or was his Saban success more like when the best kid at Street Fighter keeps losing to the button masher?
That's good.
I like that analogy, Gus and the button masher.
That's great. I like it.
No, I think there were things that Gus's offense did. Again, it wasn't always a problem, right? Again, I go back and look at 2013 to 14, we tore them into little pieces. So, but I think the problem is that Saban and his coaching staff and his analysts would adapt and analyze and analyze and analyze. And so you really had to change things up to be consistently effective against them. And you couldn't keep doing the same things. So but I like the button masher analogy.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I think that's fine. All right. That's all the questions for tonight.
That's it.
All right. Very good. Well, we do not have a show next week. Next weekend is Memorial Day weekend. And I think that we plan to do things with our families and so forth. And so we're going to take well-earned, well-deserved week off. I'm sure you all understand. But we will be during that time, during the next 2 weeks, certainly working on the book. so that it will be out in August. So I'll be hammering away at more on that for sure. I'm sure John's getting his part wrapped up too pretty soon, and we'll be all set to go. So so no show on May 31st, I guess, or June 1st.
That's right. It'll be May 31st.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be the day we record, and it would go on the air June 1st, but it won't. So we'll see you guys all again in 2 weeks. Otherwise, we'll see you on Twitter. We'll see you around our other usual locations, and we'll have more updates on the road trip and all that. So I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. Where are you, John?
Where are you, man?
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.